Genesis 33. And Yaakov lifted up his eyes and looked, and behold, he saw his brother was coming, and 400 men were with him. So he divided the children among Leah and Rachel and the two female servants. And he put the servants with their children in front, and then Leah and her children, and Rachel and Yosef last of all. He himself went on before them, bowing himself to the ground 7 times until he came near to his brother. But Esau ran to meet him and embraced him and fell on his neck and kissed him, and they wept. And when Esau lifted up his eyes and saw the women and children, he said, "Who are these with you?" And Yaakov said, "The children whom God has graciously given your servant." Then the servants drew near, they and their children, and bowed down. Leah likewise and her children drew near and bowed down. And last, Yosef and Rachel drew near, and they bowed down. Esau said, "What do you mean by all this company that I met?" Yaakov answered, "To find favor in the sight of my Lord." But Esau said, "I have enough, my brother. Keep what you have for yourself." Yaakov said, "No, please. If I have found favor in your sight, then accept my present from my hand. For I have seen your face, which is like seeing the face of God, and you have accepted me. Please accept my blessing that is brought to you, because God has dealt graciously with me, and because I have enough." Thus he urged him, and he took it. Then Esau said, "Let us journey on our way, and I will go ahead of you." But Yaakov said to him, "My Lord knows that the children are frail, and that the nursing flocks and herds are a care to me. If they are driven hard from one day, all the flocks will die. Let my Lord pass on ahead of the servant, and I will lead on slowly, at the pace of the livestock that are ahead of me, and at the pace of the children, until I come to my Lord and Savior." So Esau said, "Let me leave with you some of the people who are with me." But he said, "What need is there? Let me find favor in the sight of my Lord." So Esau returned that day on his way to Seir. Yaakov journeyed to Sukkot and built himself a house and made Sukkot for his livestock. Therefore, the name of the place is called Sukkot. And Yaakov came safely to the city of Shechem, which is in the land of Canaan, on his way to Padan Aram, and he camped before the city. And from the sons of Hamor, Shechem's father, he bought 100 pieces of money, the piece of land on which he had pitched his tent. There he erected an altar and called it El Elohe Israel. Now Dinah, the daughter of Leah, whom she had borne to Yaakov, went out to see the women of the land. And when Shechem, the son of Hamor, the Hivite, the prince of the land, saw her, he seized her and lay with her and humiliated her. And his soul was drawn to Dinah, the daughter of Yaakov. He loved the young woman and spoke tenderly to her. So Shechem spoke to his father, Hamor, saying, "Get me this girl for my wife." Now Yaakov heard that he had defiled his daughter Dinah, but his sons were with him, with his livestock in the field, so Yaakov held his peace until they came. And Hamor, the father of Shechem, went out to Yaakov to speak with him. The sons of Yaakov had come in from the field as soon as they heard of it, and the men were indignant and very angry, because he had gone and done an outrageous thing in Israel by lying with Yaakov's daughter. For such a thing must not be done. But Hamor spoke with them, saying, "The soul of my son Shechem longs for your daughter. Please give her to him to be his wife. Make marriages with us. Give your daughters to us, and take our daughters for yourselves. You shall dwell with us, and the land shall be open to you. Dwell and trade in it, and get property in it. Shechem also said to her father and to her brothers, "Let me find favor in your eyes, and whatever you say to me I will give. Ask me for as great a bride price and gift as you will, and I will give you whatever you say to me. Only give me the young woman to be my wife." The sons of Yaakov answered Shechem and his father Hamor deceitfully, because he had defiled their sister Dinah. They said to them, "We cannot do this thing to give our sister to one who is uncircumcised, for that would be a disgrace to us. Only on this condition will we agree with you, that you will become as we are by every male among you being circumcised. Then we will give our daughters to you, and we will take your daughters to ourselves, and we will dwell with you and become one people. But if you will not listen to us and be circumcised, then we will take our daughter, and we will be gone." Their words pleased Hamor and Hamor's son Shechem. And the young man did not delay to do the thing, because he had delighted in Yaakov's daughter. Now he was the most honored of his father's house. So Hamor and his son Shechem came to the gate of their city, and spoke to the men of their city, saying, "These men are at peace with us. Let them dwell in the land and trade in it, for behold, the land is large enough for them. Let us take their daughters as wives, and let us give them our daughters. Only on this condition will the men agree to dwell with us to become one people, when every male among us is circumcised as they are circumcised. Will not their livestock, their property, and all their beasts be ours? Only let us agree with them, and they will dwell with us." And all who went out to the gates of the city listened to Hamor and his son Shechem, and every male was circumcised, all who went out of the gate of the city. On the third day, when they were sore, two of the men of Yaakov, Simeon and Levi, Dinah's brothers, took their swords and came against the city while it felt secure and killed all the males. They killed Hamor and his son Shechem with the sword and took Dinah out of Shechem's house and went away. The sons of Yaakov came up to the slain and plundered the city, because they had defiled their sister. They took their flocks and their herds, their donkeys, and whatever was in the city and in the field, all their wealth, all their little ones and their wives, all that was in the houses they captured and plundered. Then Yaakov said to Shimon and Levi, "You have brought trouble on me by making me stink in to the inhabitants of the land, the Canaanites and the Perizzites. My numbers are few, and if they gather themselves against me and attack me, I shall be destroyed, both I and my household." But they said, "Should we treat our sister like a prostitute?"
Puzzling part? Questioning part? What part do you, are you troubled with? All of it? I want some comments first. Let's talk about the first chapter, 33. What is in there that you have some questions about, or thoughts about, or words about? Down here.
Why would he bow before his brother when it should be only bowing to God?
We'll talk about that. Believe it or not, I figured that was going to be a question today.
I had the same question, but I also want to know, I know there's a significance that he bowed seven times, and I wanted to know about that.
Seven times, very good. Any more comments?
One more question. It said he crossed over before them. I don't know how, I thought they were going like in a line like that.
We'll talk. I can explain that. That's real not hard to figure out in Hebrew. A little bit better in Hebrew than it is in English. The runner's running.
I find it curious. Yaakov went out of his way to make sure Esau and Esau's men were always separate from him and his family. And then, of course, didn't go to see Esau. Esau would say, we'll go with you. No. Okay, so my son has been with you. No. Stay away from me, essentially, is what Yaakov is telling Esau. And as a result, once Esau's men leave, he turns around and goes back. Yaakov doesn't follow after.
Theoretically, yes. We'll have to go that in time. Okay. We have to be careful how we read this language in English, because it can be taken meaning something a little bit different than it really is reading in Hebrew. It says, Jacob lifted up his eyes. Okay, that means he'd been looking out for his brother. And he saw his brother coming with 400 men. Now he did something which seems very to our mind, because we think modern 21st century thinking, strange. He divided his camp, quote, end of quote, into four. All right? Now remember what we learned last week? There were two camps. Both camps were the host of the Lord and the host of the Lord. He divided his family between those two to protect this one under that host, this one under that host. That's a prophetic thing, by the way, deep in the future. Jacob knew what he was doing, because we reach all the way to the 49th chapter, you will see the wisdom that God gave Jacob, but we're not there yet. Now, you'll also remember last week, something happened to Jacob. What happened to Jacob? He's fighting, okay. Sorry, what? Okay. Okay, now you remember, I read the definition right out of the Bible what his name means. What does it mean?
Prince of God.
Huh?
Prince of God.
Remember, it told you it begins with a word, well, a certain letter. Yod. Yod always a masculine for he, in that phrase. He sought El. He prince El, or God. He prince of God. As we keep reading in that you learned last week, that means he has the power, that is the name he was given, has a power of something. He has a power to rule as God so rules. Because he's a prince of God, not a prince of man. Now the name goes back to Jacob, doesn't it? Why didn't it stay with Israel? Why did he go on with the name Israel for? Why did the Bible turn around and name him back to Jacob again? Because Israel is a prophetic name. Jacob knew it. Now, in this chapter, we're going to run into something. Let's take the division up. He says that there are four divisions. Belach had Dan and Naphtali. Zilpah had Gad and Asher. And Leah had Reuben, Shimeon, Levi, Yehuda, Issachar, Zebulun, and Dana. Dana. Remember her? What does her name mean? Judge. Her name means a judge. All right? Keep that in mind as we keep going. And then finally is Rachel and Joseph. Now as we read this thing on, he says he put the handmaids and their children foremost in front. Okay, so we have Bella with her two kids. And then we had Zilpah with her two. Then we had Leah with her seven, eight, whatever it was. Then we had Rachel. Right? Now, what's hard in English is that Verse 3, and he passed over before him. It's a horrible translation. Basically, he crossed over in front of them. Here's Jacob now. He's in the front of the line. Bella's behind him. Zelpha's behind that one. Leah's behind that one. And Rachel's the last one. It is Jacob that's in the front of the line. In Hebrew, it says he passed through or passed over. He went around them and was now in the front of the line. Now, when he was there, something happened. But before we go there, I want to play something. We're not going to talk about this today, but later on. Only one son was named. All the rest were not in this chapter. Who was named? Joseph. I'm not going to tell you right now, but that is a reason for it much later as we go on down the life of Jacob. Just keep that in mind. Now, here's this question. I tried to explain this many times before, and I'll do it again. In the United States of America, especially amongst the Christian world, we will not, nor we will ever, because we're Americans, bow before the king or the queen. It's anti-American, right? Now, if you were in any other country in the face of the earth, a citizen of the country, and a king came up, what would you do? You would bow. Where would you bow to? My head straight up? No. Your head goes down. This is over and over and over. Even Abraham bowed his head when he went before the people who, when he went and bought the land, he bowed before him. We say, what's he doing that for? That's anti-God. No, it's not. What does bowing tell us? Respect. Honor. You mean he respected and honored his brother? You know what he called his brother? Adonai. Called him Adonai. Oh, horrible word. No, it isn't. It's a blessed word. What does Adonai mean? My Lord. Doesn't mean God. Doesn't mean Yeshua. Doesn't mean Yahweh. Doesn't mean Yahuwah. It doesn't mean Jehovah. It means my Lord. It's very common in all of the Bible. You'll see this over and over and over again, even amongst the prophets. But in our American society, we will never call any human being my Lord, my master, my ruler. We may say yes, sir, to our boss, but as far as we go, right? Because we're Americans are anti-respectful in relationship to what the Bible teaches us. Now, this is the teaching from the Torah to understand we are to humble ourselves. At this point in time, he did it 7 times. What does it tell you about Jacob doing it 7 times? He completely humbled himself before his brother. What would he do that for? Any answer? Any thoughts? Why would he do that for?
To respect authority?
Okay. Bingo. Was he afraid of the 400 men? Well, let's find out. Let's continue on with our little scenario here. Did I answer your question about being bowed? Bowed is anti-American Christians. It's also anti-American. We got to get off the subject matter because we have to look and see how does God want Jacob to do? How does God want Jacob to respond? How did God, we just got to beat him up. Right? What happened to Jacob when he was beaten up? He became humble. Where God wanted him to be in the first place. But at his timing, God's timing, not Jacob's timing. Let's go on. And we continue here. And then verse 4. Esau ran to him with a sword to kill him. Oh. Esau ran to him because he wanted to beat him up. Give him a good old 1-2. Now, I'm being upfront with you on this thing. Many of you have also heard a doctrinal concept from the Jewish world. I'm not anti-Jewish, nor am I anti-Christian. I just anti-doctrine that's contrary to the truth. That make sense to you? I don't care who is going to come out with a contrary doctrine that's contrary to the Word of God. I'm going to speak against it. Here we find out something different. It says, and he did something with him. What did he do? He embraced him. How many times do you people embrace one another? A lot, don't you? What happens when you embrace one another? You're going to squeeze so hard, you're going to kill him by crushing him? Is that what Esau did? Now we have to watch the actions of Esau. Understand the actions of Esau and why he did what he did. It's explained in this chapter why. And there's been this thing about Esau giving him a kiss. And there's a doctrinal theory that he gave the kiss of death. That's not listed in the Bible. You may believe it, you may accept it, and you may go on with your life believing he gave a kiss of death. But that's not what that Torah Elohim, the creator of heaven and earth, put in his word. Don't add anything. I don't take anything away. Do you understand what I'm saying? The reason why I'm a little bit verbal on this one, because I've heard so many doctrines about this, it drives me up a wall. That's just me. That's just Richard. And once again, you can disagree with me. And lo and behold, Esau saw something. He lifted up his eyes. Wow, what did he see? Well, he saw Jacob. First man he met was Jacob. First person he met was Jacob. Esau's men were behind him. Here is Jacob. Here's Esau. They ran and hugged one another. Oh. And after that hugging and that kissing, he looked up and says, what's this? First time now he saw Bella and the two kids. Then he saw Zelpha and her two. Then he saw Leah and her tribe, whole group. Then he saw, and what did Jacob do about it? What was Jacob's response?
He said, these are the children that God graciously gave to your servant.
And now, what took place? The handmaids came near, and they and their children, and they bowed before Esau. And Esau was not just a has-been guy. Esau was not just a military leader. He had power. He was a wealthy man. In this scripture, you know that. He was not cursed by God. Maybe you think he was, right? Because way back in the story, where all the blessings were given to Jacob, remember that? And Esau said to his father, is there not one? He says, this is the only one I give you. You will break the yoke that's upon your neck that your brother has put upon you. Now,
This is like 20 years later. So they're in the age of 60, approximately, both boys, men now in the age about 60. Now what happened next? Leah and all her tribe, well, kids, what'd they do? Bowed. Now, why would they do that? And then along comes Rachel, and she does the same thing, and this little boy does the same thing. Now, in our world, something is really weird about this. Now, verse 8. And he said, that is Esau, what is this? And this is what Jacob said. Too fine. Oh, that's not a New Testament word, is it? Remember the false writings that's in the book of John? Most of your King James version. It says, the law came by Moses, but grace came by Yeshua. What's this happening here? Did grace come by Yeshua here? Who gave him grace? That's weird. I thought only the Messiah could do that. Not according to the Torah. Sight of Adonai, meaning my Lord. Here's that word, Adonai. And what does grace mean in Hebrew? Same thing, by the way, means in Greek. No. That's worldwide Church of God teaching, and it's not true. Get that to your head. What does grace mean? Favor. Do you give favor to your children? You give grace to your children. Do you give favor to your employees? You give grace to your employees. Do you give grace, a favor to your mom and your dad? You give grace to your mom and dad. It's not something you earn. It's what you do to others. Period. So we have to kind of be careful here. Taking out that Christianity concept and just read what it says in the Torah. And Esau, of course, all that stuff. And Esau says, I don't need it. Keep it. And of course, Joseph said, no, no, take it anyway. And so as time went by, they had a blessing. They blessed one, prayed each one another, blessed each other, so on and so forth. And then Esau continued on his way back to his land. Now in verse, just to clarify a horrible mistranslation for you who have both King James and even Young's Living Bible, or literal Bible. He says, Jacob came to Shalim, a city. That is the only place in all of the Bible it's translated as Shalim as if it's a noun. It isn't. It just means what? A place of safety. Same, it comes from the word shalom. Shalim means safety. It's a safe place. And it doesn't say he came to that place because the word the lamed is not there in Hebrew. So he came to this city called Shechem, later called Shechem, and then lo and behold, he had peace. He was peace there for a while. Now there's a big gap between verse 7 and verse 6 and verse 17, 16 and 17, because it doesn't tell you whether or not Jacob went on to see his brother or not. It doesn't matter because the Bible doesn't care about that issue. Whether he did or didn't is unimportant thinking. Because now the second matter changes to a particular place. Do you know where Shechem's at? First of all, where's the word Shechem come from? Well, I said he planted a place there at Shechem. Verse 18. He's in the city of Shechem. He pitched his tent in front of the city, entryway to the city. The next chapter talks about that particular situation. But what does Shechem mean? Okay. Comes from a Hebrew word meaning a ridge. Abraham's time. Remember Abraham went to Shechem? Remember that? It wasn't called Shechem, the city. It was called a ridge, a mountain range. And the city of Shechem was between two Pacific mountains. Guess what two mountains they were between? Huh? One starts with an E, Ebal, and the other one is Gezerim. Now, what happened to those? Why are those two mountains so important? Why are they important? Just a couple of mountains. You remember what Jacob, Moses said to Joshua, when you cross over, on this mountain will be blessings and that mountain will be curses. Ebal and Chorazim. There you are. That's where Shechem is, in between those two mountains. So I just give you an idea where they're at. The old word does mean to come to the point where you are in a ridge. You're between a ridge, a mountain range, or what's called a backbone. When you look at the Rockies in our own country, there's a high point in all of them, right? And biblically speaking, back in 1611 English, that was called the backbone of the series of mountains. We don't look at that in our English language as being, an American English language, as being a backbone. But we also call it the Continental Divide, right? Something's different on one side than the other side. One goes west, the other one goes east. Unusual. Unusual mountains to have east and west, right? No. Now, as time went by, Jacob decided to buy something. Verse 19. Remember his grandfather did buy some land already, right? Bought it farther south. Now, doesn't say anywhere in the Bible that Isaac bought anything. He just kept moving from well and well to next well to next well. And so he bought a field. And he put his tent there. And then something happened. What happened? He worked it at an altar. In the land where he is facing, he bought this piece of land outside of the city of Shechem. And he built an altar, and he used an unusual name. What was the name of it? L-L-A is Israel. L-O-R-A-Y. Very close to, remember, in Abraham's time, it's called El-Elyon. Okay, but not the same words here. Close to it, but not quite. I explained a little bit last week, and this is probably one of the biggest you could look at, and it's actually made up of three words. Right? El is one of them. Elohe is the second one. And Yisrael is the third one. Now, it's very fascinating to stop and think about this for a full service. The very first word is El. What does El mean? It means what? No. It's one of the most common words used in the entire Bible. That's the next word used, but not talking about this word. Remember I told you last week? Begins with an aleph and ends with a lamed. Remember that? What does the aleph represent in the pictogram? What? What?
Life. Aleph, the beginning.
A bull. A calf. A head of a calf. What's a lamed represent? It means lead or leadership. The bull is leading. Bull always refers to a very strong, powerful animal. God uses the physical to describe who He is. That's why they built calf. So they have an image of power and strength. Because what did Aaron say? Feast unto the Lord. Because that's how they pictured power. Because the first letter of the alphabet is power. Strength. L means to lead. They didn't have the llama there. They just had the calf. The next one is Elohe. Not used very often in the Bible. What do you think that means? Remember, El is strength and leadership. Now we have Elohe.
Strength,
L? The L is the strength, yeah. Strength, and then you got Ohe. It's the same as, it's a singular of Elohim. It's a singular of Elohim. Very interesting to know that there is only one of whom?
God.
That's not what it says.
God of Israel.
Okay. There's only one God of Israel.
Amen.
Have you ever heard that statement before? Shema Israel. Right? The Lord your God is Echad. Not many, just one. Where do you think they got that idea from? Huh. Must have been through the patriarchs. Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. One God. Not a multitude of ones. The plurality means many strengths. So Elohim means the God of many strengths. Now Elohim is used an awful lot in the Bible, including for a pagan, quote, God. When you read your King James, read the Bible, and quote, these people are worshiping a God, and it's lowercase g, lowercase o, lowercase d. Now in Hebrew, I'm going to ask you a question. Are there upper cases and lower cases in Hebrew? No. There is no upper case or lower case. So every time you hear, let's say Melech or Moloch, the Elohim of the Pharisees or of the Philistines, same word is used there. When we talk and use the word Elohim and refer it to the creator of heaven and earth, right? The very first part of Genesis chapter 1. Now the reason why you use the word Elohim in the first chapter of Genesis 1 is because why? What took place for 6 days? A lot of power, a lot of force, a lot of creation. Unbelievable and uncountable, which human beings cannot even come close to putting in their brain
How do you separate water from water? How do you make a heaven? How do you make an earth? How do you make the plants? How do you make power? Power. Power. Lots of it. And he completed his power on what day? The seventh day, he created it. That's completion. God's got the complete power. He completed, he had full power of everything, including rest. What power did he not have over? What authority did he not have over? Which sun did he not control? Which star did he not control? Which moon did he not control? Which rain does he not control? Which flood does he not control? What tornado he does not control? Evolutionary concept? Nah, he had no control. God is weak as a straw made of, I don't know, hay. Just break it in pieces, throw in the fire. That's how weak God is to an awful lot of people. So we're at this point now to realize that there's something that Jacob also said. Let's backtrack just a little bit. Because there's something very important he said. And it had to do when Jacob... let's see, where was that? Verse 10. Now, isn't that a very odd statement? Did you read verse 10? What? Let me read it. Just in case you forgot. And Jacob said, "Nay, I pray thee, if now I have found grace in your sight, then receive my presence at my hand, for therefore I have seen thy face as though I have seen the face of Elohim." Wow. Really? I mean, God looks like Esau? Is that what he's saying? Now, don't you think it's an odd statement? Let me ask you a really sincere question. Don't have to answer it. If God has wounded you to a point of complete humbleness and you submit to his power and you, for some odd strange reason, ask him after he's already hit you with a 2x4 or maybe a 4x4, or maybe 8x4, maybe 10x10, you finally say, "Would you give me a blessing?" And it's, well, what, yeah, okay. Because you have submitted. How many times, don't ask yourself inside internally. How many times have you known where you have gone contrary to what God wanted to do, knowingly or unknowingly, let's put it this way. And all of a sudden there's great things happen that's not positive. And what is your first response? Well, human beings, the first response is, "The devil made me do it," if you're Christian. Right? "The devil had a hold of me." That's Christianity, right? Not God. It wasn't God who punished or held down or pinned Jacob down. It was the devil, right? Oh. In the Torah, you read over and over and over again, every action that is negative or positive with these three men comes from Elohim. The devil didn't have anything to do with it. Man didn't have anything to do with it. Brother didn't have anything to do with it. Kissing cousin had nothing to do with it. Nobody had anything to do with it except God. I'll tell you again, I'll repeat myself again. The book of Genesis is not about people. It's about God, how he acts, how he thinks, and what he does. It's not about a bunch of stories to teach your little children
all the story of this and the story of that, the story of this, the story of that. If you do, tell them, this is what God did to this man. This is what God did to this man. This is what God did to that woman. This is what God, express the word God to them, and they'll recognize, okay, it is God doing it. Instead of Esau being a bad guy, Jacob being the supplanter, this is God. God has a plan. And you don't think your kids can't figure that out? You underestimate, excuse my words, the wisdom of the Creator who created the brain of your little boy and your little girl. You underestimate that. I can speak with experience, by the way. Okay, let's go on to the next chapter. Hope I answered some of the questions in the first one. Second was kind of unusual. It had to do with Dina. What happened to her? Why was she defiled? So was she... Now, that's a quick question. Was she sinning against the will of her father, Jacob, by going off and to, and going to the city, to have friendship with the other girls? Did it say that she transgressed her father's will? Transgressed her father's statement? Transgressed anything about her father said to her? So let's be careful. I've heard so many people judge this young lady to such a negative point that they don't really understand judgment. Okay. What judgment took place? We don't know how old Dina was at this point in time. All we know that she was younger than Joseph. She was born after Joseph was born. Now, this has been some years later, because he already got a piece of property, bought a piece of land. He built a monument, an altar. So we have no idea about the age. We can assume she might have been a teenager, or maybe not. She might have been a young woman. We don't know. We can speculate at one side and down the other, and have all this thinking in our brain. But our thinking in our brain has no value. To be honest with you. Now, it says, and he took, verse 2, Shechem did, he took. He took what? He took her. Where did he take her? She went there to do what? Yeah, to visit the daughter. How many women? Okay, you ladies, don't answer the question out loud, inside yourself. How would you like to be the only female other than an old, four old ladies, and you'd like to know, have a companionship with someone about your age? Did you ever have that growing up? Probably not. Anyway, she had a bunch of brothers. And it's natural for any, my mind, female. Why is it natural for a female to want to have a companion with other females? I'm sorry, what?
We like to talk. Sure. And share, you know.
This lady over here, she learned something from me. I says, don't ask me feminine questions. You don't ask me feminine questions. I can't answer them. I'll take a wild guess in the night, and guess what? Bamble! It's way off somewhere. And she said, I won't ask you never a question like that again. It's not a personal thing. It was a question that's in the biblical words. And I said, ask my wife. And so she did. She got an answer. But you know, isn't it natural? God did not create the female mind like the male mind. So I look at this story where she is out to talk to other female daughters, like about her age. She's going to be like most girls are, or young women are. They want to talk. But guess what happened to her? Taken.
Taken.
Ah. That's different.
I've heard all sorts of, quote, doctrinal thinking that she went there because of the girls having orgies. Come off it! That ain't come close to truth. They like to damn this lady because, well, she's a female. What do you expect? Anyway, the word took. Yes, it can mean to take. It also can mean to fetch. And also can mean to lay hold of. To lay hold of and to take away. Now, she was with others. She's with girls of her age, young women of her age. And the king's son, really weird, by the way, we'll get there in a minute, took her. And it said here, and defiled her. What does defile mean? The Bible uses the word defiled in a lot of different places for a lot of different situations. Damaged. Sorry, what?
I say damaged emotionally.
Yeah, because you know why? You think like a woman. Right? Now, Jacob was violated by his father-in-law. 10 times you have changed my wages. That's violation. Okay, defiled. So we look at this thing, we're saying, okay, what took place here? It does mean to occupy. Take possession of. It means basically to humble one down. In a sense, to bring them down. So in this particular Hebrew word, it's not necessarily a positive one. At this particular location, Hebrew word in other locations, it also can be positive, depends upon the situation that they're at hand. Now we're looking at this thing, really strange. Make the story kind of absurd. Jay went down, when Jacob found out about it, what did he do? Verse 5, Jacob held his peace. Now, we don't know how old Jacob was at this particular point in time. We know that Benjamin has not been born yet. And we also know that Joseph could not be very old at this particular point in time because he was taken at the age of 17. So we're not talking about a 88-year-old man. Probably taking, you know, let's say 60, 65, 70-year-old man, somewhere in that range. We don't know. Doesn't matter. But he didn't do anything about it. Now, is it because he was afraid? Why didn't he do something about it? Was he a coward? No. He waited until his sons came back. Why do you think he waited for his sons to come back? To see what they would do?
Well, because they would have to bear the brunt of the consequences of whatever Jacob decided. I remember watching a TV show a while back, actually, and there's this king wants to make a decision about how to do something, and he tells the queen what he wants to do, and the queen asks, why are you telling me this? And the king says, because whichever decision I make, whether we are laughed at, humiliated, or we end up being overthrown, you're going to have to bear the same consequences of it as me. And so I almost kind of wonder in this situation if he went, because some of the sons are adults now. You know, Reuben and some of the sons are adults now, so they would also have to bear the consequences of however they react to it. So it isn't just Jacob himself. It's his whole family is going to bear the consequences however he deals with the situation.
No one over there? Jeff, out of there.
It says he was with the livestock. So I kind of think that they were more in jeopardy out in the field with the livestock of being killed themselves or something if he'd have done something to the one boy.
Okay.
But what's the subject matter in this chapter? What is the subject matter in this chapter? Dina. Now Jacob held back. It says he held his peace until they came. Then Jacob said something to them. It doesn't really record too much what Jacob did, but Jacob did say something. The sons of Jacob came out of the field, and when they heard the men, they were... What's the first word? Grieved. Why were they grieved for? Their sister was violated. Their feelings went out toward their sister. Their only sister.
If she's not a virgin, you know, they...
Yes, yes. Right, yes. She never married. She never married. Now remember her name. Judge. Okay. Something happened to this judge. Right? As we read on with this thing, we hear this tale, okay, we'll get circumcised and we'll give our daughters to you and we'll give our daughters back and forth so we could be echad. We could be the same peoples. And we know, reading between the lines, that even the Shechem was willing to do this because he was the only one that had, he was the most honorable amongst the most of the house of his father.
That's pretty pitiful.
When you stop and think about it, it's really kind of funny, isn't it? Okay. He is the most honorable. All he did was just defile her. All he did was defile the judge. Now, let's get to the end of the story for a moment. We don't have to go to the details because we already read it, right? And so his sons made a decision that was not pleasing to Jacob, and Jacob became afraid. What was, quote, the judgment of Simeon and Shimon, rather, and Levi? What was their judgment?
Death.
Oh. Okay, they carried out what appears to be on the surface, right? Man stuff, man this, man that, woman did this, woman did that. And God's not involved with anything that went on in this particular chapter because God's not even mentioned, right? God has no value in it, right? He had no say-so in it. Now, so we look at this sometimes and we say, okay, and lo and behold, on the third day, something happened. What happens on the third day? Either life or death. Was this a judgment? Who carried out the judgment? Oh, we know, Shimeon and Levi. We got that. We understand that, right? So they're the ones that are guilty. Right? Now, even when my mind just slipped. Nebuchadnezzar went beyond what God wanted him to do. Remember, he raised up Nebuchadnezzar to give Judah a blessing and not a cursing. You know that? He's supposed to go over there and bless them. Oh no, I got that wrong. He must raise them up to do what? Destroy them! Oh, and he went too far. How far did he go? He took the gold from the temple. Too far. Now, and he went insane for 7 years. We won't go there. So we see here, yes, it looks like this was a very bad thing, yes, but the judge was defiled. This is how I look at this thing. The last one born was the woman. And that woman's name was Judge. And that judge was defiled. Did judgment come upon the man and that people for that defilement? Did judgment come upon Shechem and his father and the whole city? Or was it just, okay, a bunch of young guys, middle-aged men, no, can't be middle-aged, not at that home yet, just lost it? I would say, well, they lied, they cheated, they did this, they did that. That's irrelevant with God. Do you know that God actually will use a liar to bring forth punishment?
What?
Punishment? And death? Where can I prove that to you? There was a certain king that God said, I'm going to kill you in the field. That king said, yeah, I'm going to get out there. And he said, I'll get him out there. And then the angel came and says, tell you what, I'll lie to him. Yeah, that'll work. I lied to him, went out of the field, got killed. So, is God unjust? In our human thinking, yes. You lied, you let a liar do the bad thing for you when you should have done it yourself. That's human thinking, isn't it? That's human justice. That's human understanding. That's human wisdom. That's human thought. Is it God's? So we have to understand God and how he thinks, what he does. In this incident, we have to pay attention to what God did. The judge was defiled. Judgment come. And it cost the life of every man. And what happened to the women and children? They became prisoners. They could be sold, bought and sold. We say that's unjust. Well, that's fine, because we're humans. We can say that. You think God's going to hear it? Yes.
It says that Jacob said to Simeon that you have troubled me by making me obnoxious among the inhabitants of the land. Wasn't that already prophesied by the Lord that the nations would go against? The answer to your question,
yes, it did. The next chapter, God tells them what to do. We're not there, are we? Because Jacob had not fulfilled his promise to God at all. No way to get out of Shechem. Kill everybody there. I'll get that guy moved where I want to move. And he moved him. And Jacob had to fulfill his promise. Why should we have a harlot in Israel? Why should we have a harlot? Made her a prostitute. Not literally, it's an overused word in English. Why should we have our daughter be defiled in Israel? Why? That's the answer they gave their father. Their father had no response back. Did you notice that? No response back. Because why? Jacob put the judgment literally upon his own sons to make the judgment. Now in our mind, they went overboard. Because we think they went overboard. Because we want to think they went overboard. All they should have done was just kill Shechem. Just kill Shechem, that's all. How are they going to do that? They've got to stop all the men there. How do you stop all the men from coming after you? Lie to them. Tell them they had to be circumcised. And you knew on the third day, they're in bad shape. We got them.
God also didn't want them mixing. And that has been, from the very beginning, he did not want the Israelites mixing with the other tribes. And
no.
That was...
Where do you find that?
I think it's quite a few places.
Before, we're not talking about the, but written after Moses, or written during Moses. Something had to happen before this incident takes place to know that that's not what God wanted them to happen.
Well, he sent Jacob to Paran to get a wife.
That's right.
He did not want
to marry a Canaanite, a Perizzite, or whatever they call him. I'm sorry, I pronounced that word horribly wrong, but okay. Now, the older brother did, didn't he? That's it. You have compromised. I hate to use that word compromise. You have, quote, overruled the will of Devarim Elohim. Pretty heavy stuff, isn't it? All right. I'm not saying all the brothers and all the children of Jacob were righteous. Because only centers in on one name. And when we get there, we'll find out why. But the name that this chapter lists twice, not in the last chapter, lists twice, is the name of Joseph. So the Bible's telling us, next event, next person we need to pay attention to after this story is finished is a man named Joseph. How many of you have an overview of what Joseph, who he was, and what he did, and his power? You understand that? We've got to find out more in detail as we go along why Jacob, that was his favorite. There's a reason why. We'll get there when we get there. Keep that in mind. Any questions? Remember, this is my thinking. You don't have to believe everything I do.
That Simeon and Levi are mentioned as the two that, you know, go with their swords. Simeon and Levi.
Shimon. What does Shimon mean? Shimon, what is his name? What does it mean? Where does it come from? Why was it given that name for? Come from the word Shim. Shimon. Why did she name him Shimon? Because God heard. So when we look at Shimon, we have to be very careful not to put a negative thinking on any one of these sons of Jacob. They're human as you and I are. It was like when I look at anybody, I told him Joe back there, that there comes a point in time that a child will come to realize that inside of himself or inside of herself, she or he can do bad things and know it and choose to do that which is bad compared to choose that which is good is overpowering in human beings, because the first influence you want is to protect yourself first against all odds. I had a granddaughter. She's not very old. I've been 5, 6 years old. And they were raised to get up not to lie. And of course, it was great. And then one of the cookies were missing from the cookie jar. And they asked her, do you know? And her mother saw her take it. And this young women, young, they think the child's going to be a beautiful child. I'm going to raise it right. So I'll never lie or cheat, steal, right? No, that's not that stupid. But anyway, she saw him take it, and she turned around and said to her daughter, after she's eaten it, so, by the way, there's the cookie missing. Did you take it? No! It stunned them. She actually lied. Caught in the act, she actually lied. See, she understood right and wrong. I don't know how old she was. But when it comes to a certain age, then bad can turn to do evil things. Right? Oh, you probably remember that you got older and older and older. You knew you can get back onto somebody by doing they're nasty to you. You can figure out how to get retaliation. You get nasty back to them. That's human needs. That's what humans do. Not a one of us escaped from that. God bless us by helping us to see within ourselves we have the, quote, sin is within us. What are we going to do about it? Pray out like crazy to God to help us get rid of it or not to do it. And now we stumble, we fall, we pick up, and God doesn't pick us up. He says, no, get off the rock, which is the Messiah, right? Get off the rock and start walking where you're supposed to walk. You know, that's how God is with us. You have a question?
Well, it's not really a question. It's just, this might get hard for me, but I was defiled so many times during my life. And what God's shown me through the forgiveness work is that He's changing me. And I want whoever did all that, I want them to come to know His love. It's like God does amazing things. And so the defilement, yeah, it was there. And yeah, it left marks on me. But no, God takes every one of those and He gives me a strength because I can see that He really is dealing with everything. I don't have to watch Him kill anybody. Would I want to? No. But just to hear the story and to know that God cares so deeply and that He's willing to even take what those deeds turned me into, all the hatred and anger, and make me a new person, that's love.
All right. Okay, I'm going to call it quits, but I just want to keep one more thing. When we think sometimes very negative about the sons of Jacob, when we reach to the 49th chapter of Genesis, which some look up as there are curses and blessings to them, pay close attention when we get there. You might be surprised. Sometimes there come up some ideas you never heard of, right? You'll be surprised there too.